It's Sunday, 22nd of March, 2020. I'm in quarantine. Sounds grim, doesn't it? But actually, it's better to think of it as just voluntary house arrest. I'm not ill, thank goodness, but I am over 70. And the UK government, in its wisdom, has decided that people who are over 70 ought to effectively shut themselves off as much as they can from the physical world for a few months. The fact that I feel relatively relaxed about that is really a measure of how fortunate I am. I've always been able to work from home. My wife and I live in a comfortable, spacious house with a garden. We live in a village which is pretty rural. And we and our grown-up children are all, touch wood, currently in good health. And we can safely take some exercise every day because we can walk or cycle in areas where we meet very few other people. But with this good fortune comes guilt feelings, because I am acutely aware that for many other people, self-quarantine is no joke. I think, for example, of elderly people living alone in small apartments, or families also living in apartments where the parents are out of work because of the virus and the children are at home because the schools are closed. For many of these people, a period of indefinite quarantine like the one we're facing will be difficult. For some of them, it'll be hellish. And I'm pretty sure there'll be a lot of psychological damage as a result of what's happening. But for me, while this confinement may be a problem and sometimes an irritant, it is also an opportunity to do some thinking and some writing. And it occurred to me that it might be interesting to compile an audio diary of the next period, partly as a way of capturing one's thinking at each moment, and partly with the thought that if we do actually survive this, then it may be instructive later on to look back on these kinds of records, much as we looked back on the records of mass observation during the Second World War. Over the last week, one got the feeling that the terrible reality is beginning to dawn on people, that this virus and the crisis that comes with it is truly terrible. And it will have a really lasting impact on all of our lives. One way of thinking about it is to say that we have the equivalent of the Spanish flu of 1918, which killed between 50 and 100 million people, and was then followed by the Great Depression of the 1930s. Now it looks as though we have two comparable catastrophes at once. The world, says Lucy Kellaway, one of my favourite Financial Times columnists, is dividing into two, not just between those self-isolating and those at large, but between the anxious and the phlegmatic. Well, I'm both anxious and phlegmatic. The anxious part of me feels that most people still don't have an appreciation of the horrors that lie ahead. The phlegmatic bit of me says that we will get through it somehow. And the optimistic bit says that when we do get through it, we will be emerging into a completely different world. It seems to me that the more one knows about this stuff, the more frightened one becomes. This morning, I had an email from a good friend who, like me, is in isolation in London. From a close relation, who is a clinician and administrator in a major hospital, he writes, "I have a deeply moving account of what it's like at the sharp end. I will spare you the details, but I pass along his telling comparison of the current momentary lull in demand to, quote, a receding ocean before a tsunami," unquote. Another friend sends me a copy of a letter written by the head of surgery at a very prominent New York hospital to his colleagues. He starts by describing the stresses that they are already under. And his last paragraph reads like this: "Nothing would give me greater pleasure than to apologize profusely in a few weeks for having overestimated the threat. That would mean we never exceeded capacity and that mortalities and morbidities rarely seen in non-pandemic circumstances were avoided. The next month or two is a horror to imagine if we are underestimating the threat. So what can we do? Load the sled, check the traces, feed Balto, and mush on. Our cargo must reach Nome. Remember that our families, friends, and neighbours are scared, idle, out of work, and feel impotent. Anyone working in healthcare still enjoys the rapture of action. It's a privilege. We mush on. And what struck me was that phrase, the rapture of action, because in a way, the people who work in medicine at the sharp end of this are really the only people who are capable of doing anything about it. The rest of us are condemned simply to be spectators.